I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Laura Lacuona. She studied philosophy at the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México. She's an editor and translator specializing in memoirs, young adult fiction, and social sciences. As a popularizer of feminism, she's a regular writer, lecturer, and writer. She's Mexico's country contact for Women's Declaration International, and the author of Gender Identity, Lies and Dangers, Spinifex Press, 2024. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Derek. I'm glad to be here and be able to speak with you about my book, Gender Identity, Lies and Dangers. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Yeah, thank you for writing it. So the introduction begins, this book was born out of a commitment to feminism and to freedom of speech. Both are going through a difficult time for reasons that will be explained at length in the following pages. Sorry if this question is too broad, but can you talk about the difficulties faced by both feminism and free speech and the connection between them?
Yeah, sure. Nowadays, feminism can mean anything according to who is talking about it. For example, feminism for the institutions, for the media, for the universities nowadays, it is something which I would rather call anti-feminism, because they are fostering ideas. For example, they promote prostitution, they promote pornography, they promote surrogacy. And these are nothing but, these are examples of the worst, I'm trying to find the word in Spanish, we say cosificación. It's the treating women as if they were objects. These are horrible examples of violence against women. And nonetheless, there are plenty of people who think this is feminism. We have to promote these things. They call them empowering without thinking a little more about it, without looking into the causes, without asking why this happens. And they just say, well, this is empowering to women and hooray, let's go for it. But feminism, as I understand it, as all radical feminists understand it, goes against that. Feminism cannot promote ways of being violent against women as porn and prostitution are. So if you go with a young girl, for example, and she's interested in feminism, well, in principle, that's a great thing. We need more feminists. But what she will encounter, for example, in the university, in some conference in her town, is nothing but. So that's a huge problem. And we feminists who are trying to explain how promoting surrogacy, allowing males to buy the bodies of women in exchange for some money, and all these things are not feminist, and why we have to go to the root of the problem, and how pornography is teaching young men how to absolutely abuse women. When we try to talk about this, we are accused of being from the ultra right, or of being intolerant towards these people, homophobic. This is a word they use, for example. So and that has the effect of canceling the debate and the necessary conversation, social conversation about these issues. And concretely about transgenderism is another one of these issues which are not well understood. People conflate transgenderism with feminism, when in reality, transgenderism is an anti-feminist movement, a woman-hating movement, as I can explain a little more about this later. But people who aren't very informed about it conflate them, and they suddenly don't understand why are these feminists fighting against these other feminists. So with my book, I try to explain this. And I was about free speech. As I told you, this name dropping, not name dropping, this insulting, this telling us that we are transphobes in this case, has the effect of silencing women. Be it because they don't want to be seen as transphobes, or be it because there are people actively trying to get women, leave women without their jobs, leave women without a platform where to speak about their these concerns of them, of theirs. And the fact is, the transgender movement doesn't want debate. And the way they accomplish this non-debate is accusing feminisms or of hate speech. And many people buy it. So, for example, right now in Spain, there's this feminist, Silvia Carrasco, who is a teacher at the Universidad Autónoma de Barcelona. And 2 days ago, a bunch of students protested in the university where she was arriving to give some class, and they managed to cancel her class. No? And this was very violent. Imagine being a professor at a university and having to arrive with bodyguards in order for not to be beaten by these people. These kind of things are happening. It is more common each day. This has been happening since some decades ago, but it was not so widespread. Now, every day we know a new case of a feminist who has been silenced because her views aren't liked by some transgenderists and by some transgenderists and by some feminists who are feminists, I say it, quote unquote feminists, who instead of defending the right of these women to speak their mind, are defending the supposed right of some men to shut them up. So I understand it can be very confusing from the outset for those who are watching from the sides. But the aim of my book is clearing up all this mess and stating the arguments from the different parts. Of course, my stand is a radical feminist one, and I defend this stance because I think it has a lot of explanatory power. It offers a solution and explain it very clearly. But I also explain the other side of the debate with maybe some irony, but some respect. Of course, I one thing I do not do, and you cannot say this about the other side of the debate, I do not tergiversar is the word in Spanish. I don't lie about what they are saying. Because this other thing happens when transgenderists speak about feminists. They say we hate trans people. They say we are hateful people. We are fascists, Nazis, and we are advocating for the annihilation of these people. For example, when we say something like trans, there's no such thing as a trans kid, instead of allowing us to explain what this means and in what sense there is no trans kid, there are no trans children, instead of allowing us to explain calmly what this implies, they say we want to kill trans children, something like that. Well, and this is cheating, no? But in this book, I try to be fair with the other side and explain in the best way possible what they are saying, what they are really saying. Yes, and I don't know if that starts to answer your question.
No, that's great. That's great. And a few directions. One of them, when you were talking about the new feminism, which is really anti-feminism, it makes me think of something that Gayle Dines, the anti-pornography activist, said to me, which is she said she'd had students, this is 10, 12 years ago, she said that she'd had students, female students in her classes, who'd said, I like everything you say about feminism, but I don't want to be a feminist because that means I have to sleep with every man who wants to sleep with me. And she said that's how bad sort of modern feminism had gotten, is that they didn't understand that feminism was to be about making one's own sexual choices, not about being sexually available to every man in the world.
Of course.
And so that was one thing. The next thing is, and did you want to respond to that or should I go on?
No, this is that one is a great example. Of course, I know Gayle Dines' work. She's marvelous. I quote her in my book, and but this is the kind of thing students understand about feminism, because that's what they see in the media, that's what they read in the papers, that's what most of their university professors are telling them. Of course, there are two possibilities, or they definitely don't want to be feminists, because who would want to lay with every man who wants to get laid with oneself? Or they see it as a very funny thing, and the other feminists are boring in their minds, so they go with this. For example, this glitter feminism, no? The party, the costumes, no? If you want a party, that's a better option than feminist activism, which can have fun moments, but essentially it is not for the fun of it. We don't do this for the fun of it, because we are very concerned about women's rights. That those are the possibilities these young would-be feminists face, I think.
So the second one has to do with the whole free speech thing, that I've got more than 20 books out, and I've written some pretty provocative things, and one publisher dumped me because I wouldn't say that men can be women, and also I criticize queer theory. So I can criticize all these things. I can criticize corporate power. I can criticize American imperialism. I can criticize all those things. Nobody cares. But if you criticize queer theory, you're first on. And then the second thing, very quickly about that, is another publisher dumped me, and he told me why he removed me from his website and removed me from his catalog. And it was because he was receiving so many threats, physical threats. He said I was endangering the safety of his employees because of the threats by the transgenderists. And it's just, I mean, first off, it's extraordinary to me that a publisher would actually say that out loud. But second, these are just examples. And of course, I'm not unique. There's no female lawyers who can no longer work in law because they dare to say that men can't be women. There are female professors who lost their jobs. It's an extraordinary thing. I was giving examples of that and inviting you to speak on that again, because you have some harrowing stories of your own concern in your book about your own concerns for your own safety.
Yeah. I'll get into this in a minute, but I wanted to say, yes, this is, they are untouchable. How can this be happening? What is with them? What is it with them that they are the only movement, the only ideology that we cannot dare to talk about? What is it with these publishers? Either they are too cowardly to be, I would think, the publisher some years ago was a brave person willing to generate conversations about polemic topics, and now they are obeying the social media mobs. It's very sad and very impressive for me. And yes, for example, my book is the best example of how feminists like me are having their speech limited. My book was going to be published by a Mexican publishing house, which has a long history, Siglo XXI. This publishing house, in fact, was born after after the Mexican government tried to censor a publisher who was working on Fondo de Cultura Económica, another important publishing house. This is a state-funded publishing house, the Fondo de Cultura Económica. And this publisher, along with a lot of intellectuals who wanted to support him, founded Siglo XXI. Back in 2021, the editorial director of Siglo XXI invited me to write a book about this topic because he's an informed man. He knew what was that something very weird was happening with transgenderism, feminism, and he knew about my interests in the topic. So he said, I was thinking on translating Helen Joyce's new book, but it would be better if we had some Mexican author write a book, and it is an important topic I want to have in the catalog. And I say, wow, that's great. I want to write this book, and I need time to write it. So they offered an advance, and that would allow me to stop working, because I am a freelance translator and editor, that would allow me to stop working for 3 months. And I say, that's okay, I will do it. I wrote the book, we had this, I sent him chapters, he commented them. I have to say, he was very happy with the book. And this was going to be the main launch of the year in the Guadalajara's Book Fair, which is a very important book fair, the Latin America's biggest book fair, largest book fair. So this was going to be a big deal, so to say. And everything was going fine until someone, trans ally, we might say, knew that my book was going to be published by Siglo XXI. This person is an author from Siglo XXI, but I won't say her name. And she went to with her fellow trans activists and said, this Laura Lecuona, who is, of course, in their eyes, a transphobe, a hateful person, is going to publish a book in Siglo XXI. We have to start accosting them and bullying them. So they started to bully the publishing house, the Guadalajara Book Fair, until, as the example you just gave about your book of yours, until the publishing house said, I don't know, they are threatening us. And the threats, some of the threats were, of course, they were from people in social media, but some of them were concerning. They were saying, we will go and burn Siglo XXI's stand in Guadalajara's book fair, and there is a serious threat. So of course you don't want to risk that. But on the other hand, Guadalajara book fair has an important security. They have security guards. So if they wanted to allow the presentation of this book to happen, they would have done the thing. Of course, they have had Salman Rushdie in the fair, to give an example. Of course, they had security with Salman Rushdie. They were not willing to do anything special about my book because they didn't like the threats and they wanted these bullies to go away. And the most easy way to do this is say, we'll cancel the presentation, which they did. And Siglo XXI said, we are not so sure now if we want to publish the book. So that's when I decided to publish it independently in Spanish. The first edition of this book, which is now published in English by Spinifex, is in Spanish. It is self-published. Sell it on my own, and I'm very glad that more than 2,000 women and also men have bought it, and many of them have read it. So I'm very happy about that. But my book is not in the bookstores in Spanish. My book in Spanish is not in the bookstores. So what happened to me, even though it happened after the book was written, is an example of the things that are happening to us feminists, or to we feminists, because we dare to say men cannot be women. And this is a statement of fact. This is not, we are not valuing the thing. It's like saying this cat is not black, this cat is white. We are stating a fact, that's all. Well, of course, there are some more things we are saying. For example, I don't just say men cannot be women. I also say the transgenderist movement is guided and is pushed by a very dubious agenda, which, as you, I'm sure you know, Jennifer Bilek has revealed. And in fact, I like the example of Jennifer Bilek because she said, "What the hell is happening here? Why cannot we organize this conference in which some feminists are going to talk about what transgenderism means to feminism, and everyone wants to cancel it, and they manage to cancel it? What is happening? There's something very powerful behind this. There's something very powerful behind the scenes." And she started to look it up. And the result is her marvelous 11th-hour blog, which reveals all the connections. Let's say she followed the money, and she reveals all the connections between transgenderism and this false feminism, which is calls itself, well, trans-inclusive feminism. She saw the connections between this and very powerful white men. Because, of course, you know, transgenderism also presents itself as something that is supporting minorities, oppressed people. No, not at all. There's a bunch of white billionaire males who are pushing this agenda. So when you realize that some men, some heterosexual men are pushing this agenda, and one of their propaganda means is promoting the transgenderism of children, promoting the idea that some children are born in the wrong body and the way for them to be themselves is to have some to take puberty blockers and then cross-sex hormones and then maybe have what they euphemistically call a top bottom, how do they call them? Top surgery, bottom surgery, no? They're pushing this into children. And my goodness, when you realize what is at stake, well, the truth is, I cannot understand how some so-called feminists see this and say, it's okay, let's support this. Yeah, trans children. And if they want to take puberty blockers, who are we to stop them from doing it? And if they want to do to have a surgery, well, it's their body, their choice. Really? Well, there are many, many feminists, quote-unquote feminists, pushing this agenda, and there are also many as me, trying to stop it and trying to raise the alarm of what is really happening. But when people at large realize what is really happening, this transgendering of children will stop. This will stop. That's why they don't want us to speak out. No, the information is very dangerous for them. What they have in their favor is their propaganda, and part of their propaganda goes through needs the silencing of feminists. So that's how free speech goes into the scene.
Well, thank you for all that. And there's a couple of things. One is, I just want to give a quick message to publishers, which is, if you don't publish a book because somebody threatens you, you shouldn't be a publisher, because a proper response of a real publisher to somebody threatening you is, you know what? We were going to do one book. We're going to do two now. And every time you get threatened, you double down, because that's the power of the press. And that's what real writers, and that's what real publishers do. They don't give in to bullies ever, which is one reason that intellectuals are often killed in dictatorships. So anyway, I just needed to say that to all publishers listening to this interview. Somebody threatens to harm you or your employees because you want to publish a book, double down and keep doubling down, because the press can't be silenced, should not be silenced. But we're not living in that world. That's the first thing. The second thing is, also, you said top and bottom surgeries. And I really want to be clear about what we're talking about here, that in the United States, at least, an entire nation celebrated the televised castration of a young boy. And that we are talking about the mutilation of the healthy bodies of children. And if people don't get upset about that, I don't know what they will ever get upset about.
Yeah, but now they say it is hateful to use the word mutilation. No, that's why they use these euphemisms. And this takes us to another important subject in my book, the role of language in all of this. Of course, if you say this, they are mutilating children and healthy body parts, people can wake up. But if you say, oh, they're having a top surgery because this is the best for their health, oh, well, then it's a good thing. It's language has a powerful role in it, because they are disguising the reality through language. For example, when they say trans women are women, they are disguising the fact that we are talking about men. So when a quote-unquote trans woman is giving on the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day, a conference about feminism, oh, what a great thing. A trans woman feminist is going to give a conference about feminism. But if you say the truth and nothing but the truth, which is, this is no woman, this is a man, maybe you should think twice before inviting him to give a conference on the International Women's Day of all dates. No, because disguise is a part of their plan. Disguising the reality, disguising words, in order for them to be, to keep doing this to children, to keep silencing feminists, to keep destroying feminism from within, because this is another of my worries. And going back to the language thing, for example, the pronouns. Some people say, well, why don't you use their preferred pronouns? What's in it for you? Nothing happens. Why can't you be kind and say, talk about this man as a she? She likes it like that. Why don't you do it? And many women say, yeah, that's right. We know they are men, but we can call them women because that way they will feel better. Well, first of all, that's not the role of language, making some people feel good well, maybe sometimes, but well, not in this case when we are talking about an ideology which is threatening to kill feminism. But and the thing is, we are accused of being extremists because some of the gender critical women call us radical feminists extremists because we don't play the pronouns game, because we don't call some prominent trans activists who call themselves gender critical, because there are some there are some people who call themselves transgender and say they are gender critical. And there are some feminists and gender critical women who use the preferred pronouns with them. But some other feminists say, wait a minute, this is how this all started. We started calling them trans women, and look where this has taken us. Look where this has taken us. Why do you do that? Don't call them she. You are doing, you are helping transgenderism to be normalized, and you are helping to the erasure of women. You are helping to defuminate what the word woman means by calling some men he. And moreover, why? What is the criteria to call some quote unquote trans women she and her, and some of them not? Are we calling she, her, those who agree with us, and he, him, those who don't agree with us? What kind of a criteria that is that? No? So this is another, the war on women is taking place also in the language realm, and also within the gender critical group. Who think that using the preferred pronouns is okay sometimes not, but sometimes it is okay. And we radical feminists, which are called extremists for saying this, we think it is a very, very bad idea doing that, and giving voice in feminist circles, I mean, to men who claim to be women just because they know they are men. There are men who claim to be women who say they are really women, and there are men who want to present as women who say, well, at least I know I am not a woman. I know I am a man. That's some difference. But do you want me to try to explain why I claim that there's no such thing as a trans kid? And not only that, there is no such thing as a trans person, because maybe for people who are not very, very, have not read much about this subject, maybe they are confused. What am I talking about when I say there's no such thing as a trans kid? Is that okay if I go down that line?
Yeah, that would be great. I want to say one thing first, which is that
Sure. The
word she, it seems pretty clear to me, the word she is descriptive in that it is describing a physical state. And the way you're describing, the way some people use it, is an honorific. Like if you do a certain thing, then you get to become, if a guy does a certain thing, then he gets to become a she. But that's just ridiculous, because she is just, you may as well just say good vision, poor vision, two arms, and then you suddenly honorifically say, oh, you have three arms. You know, so it's like, it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, so that, and now that I've got that out of the way, yes, please do go on with that. I think that that's a really important topic.
Yes. There's this concept which is central to this debate, which is gender identity. That's why the title of my book is Gender Identity, Lies and Dangers. Gender identity is the idea that we have some kind of inner gender. This is very confusing from the start, because what feminists have been saying since the 1960s and 1970s is that sex is not the same as gender. Because gender is a social construct. Gender is an imposition of certain rules, rules of conduct and ways of being to women, and some other opposite rules of conduct to men, because they are male or female. So, this feminist, yes.
So a boy can like to play football, and a girl is supposed to play with dolls, and a boy can work on cars, and a girl is supposed to learn how to cook. Sort of what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. They used to be called sexual or sexist stereotypes. But sometimes in the 80s, the term gender started being used, and instead of gender stereotypes, but instead of sexual stereotypes, but it's the same thing. They started calling that gender to differentiate it from sex. And many feminists, I don't do that. I critique this kind of, I am very critical of the word gender itself, but the idea is,
yeah, I prefer to just say sex stereotype like you do.
Yeah, that is much clearer, because when you do, as I did in the book, trace the story of the term gender and see how it is being used in different realms by different people, it is very confusing. Everyone has his or her own definition of gender. So it's impossible to agree on the term itself. So we cannot go far enough if we do not share the same meaning. But there's a critique of the word gender, but the idea with gender identity is that we have some sort of inner gender. But if we say that gender is something which is imposed by society upon boys and girls, men and women, and we also say, as feminism does, that we should get rid of those impositions, then how can we get rid of some impositions if they are internal? It's a contradiction in terms. We cannot have an internal gender if gender is something that is teached. Sorry, it's something that is taught in schools, in the families, and something that is imposed. You cannot have an innate gender and at the same time a socially imposed gender. So what does gender mean? But the concept of gender identity is that the idea that we have an internal gender. But as many feminists, as myself, say, well, wait a minute. We want to fight against gender. We do not believe at all that we have the sexist stereotypes already entrenched in us. They are not part of who we are. We learn them through socialization, but they are not something that we are born with, of something valuable about our personality. And moreover, of course, there are some girls who like to play football. There are some boys who like to play with dolls. And that's okay. Of course, we feminists say that's okay. Nothing matters if this boy likes to play with dolls and this girl likes to play football. That's okay. That is a normal thing to do because children are playful. They want to experience the world. So it's, let them do it. No, this is our position. But when suddenly you have people saying, oh my goodness, this boy likes playing with dolls and also likes pink, as Jazz Jennings with you referred to. What is wrong with him? Let us see what is wrong with him. Oh, he has a gender identity which doesn't match with his or her body, so we have to help him or her achieve their true self. What? Why don't you just let the kid play? It doesn't matter if he likes pink things. But at the same time that they are saying that they do not want to pathologize trans kids, in reality, what they are doing is that exact thing, pathologizing gender nonconforming kids as they are described. So this is gender identity. So my claim is there's no such thing as a gender identity because we don't have an inner gender. The sexist stereotypes are something we are not born with. They're imposed on us. So we cannot have an internal gender identity. So there are no trans kids because the definition of a trans kid is a kid whose gender identity doesn't match his or her body. But if I don't believe in gender identity, as I don't believe in gendered souls, how can I believe there's a trans kid? Of course, I know there are kids as Jazz Jennings who, for some reason or other, prefer to play with girls and play with dolls and like pink things. That's okay. Let them be. There are people who are eager to impose a diagnosis on those kids and say, oh, he's a trans kid. So let's support him. Let's take him to the physician. Let's take him to someone who can give him puberty blockers. Let's do a TV show about him. That's awful, that thing you mentioned. An entire nation celebrating the mutilation of this kid. Well, so in that sense, there are no trans kids. And there are people who say, okay, there are no trans kids, but there are some trans adults. No, it's the same thing. The definition of a trans person, of an adult trans person, is an adult person who has a gender identity that doesn't match his or her body. If we don't have a gender identity, the definition falls by its own weight. It doesn't mean anything. There's not a special kind of people whom you can call trans, because nobody has a gender identity. Not even those who they call cis people. You and I are not cis people. We're people as those who call themselves trans. Okay, maybe they have some ideas in their heads. Maybe they like to dress in this or the other way. Maybe they feel feminine or masculine on the inside. I don't care. You can feel however you like. That doesn't mean you are trans. That doesn't mean you are a woman if you're a man who feels feminine. No, that doesn't mean that. No, we don't have a gender identity. The sole idea of feeling like a woman on the inside or feeling like a man on the inside, what does that mean? How does it feel to be a woman? And when I try to explain this to people, I say, well, I really don't know what does it feel like to be a woman. I know how does it feel like to be this woman that I am. And of course, I don't know either how would it feel to be a man. I will never know how it feels to be a man because I am not. But even if these people who are saying there are some males who feel like a woman inside, how can you define this feeling? They always, always resort to sexist stereotypes. Oh, because when he was a kid, he liked to use his mom's clothes, or he put on his mom's high heel shoes. Really? There are plenty of women who don't use high heel shoes. So they're not women enough? What does even the idea of being more womanly or less womanly? No. They are confusing femininity and masculinity with being a man or being a woman. Feminists don't like femininity. Of course, this doesn't mean they want to do away with all women. No, or with feminine women. No, that's not what it means. We don't like femininity because femininity is the way, the tool with which women are oppressed. Because femininity includes being kind to males, being obedient, being silent if they wanted to be silent, putting everyone else before you, of course, wearing dresses, wearing high heels, wearing makeup. Feminism has studied and seen, for example, Sheila Jeffries, whom you mentioned in her book, Beauty and Misogyny, is very clear in how these beauty impositions are a very effective way of oppressing women. Well, that's why we don't like femininity, and of course we don't like masculinity, because masculinity includes the idea that males should be violent, that males should go should pay women for sex, that males can do anything they want, including buying a baby from a surrogate, that males rule the world, and that males are allowed to beat women. That masculinity includes that. And there's something very interesting about feminism rejecting the masculinity, because this doesn't mean we reject all males. We reject the way males are raised and educated to be violent. We still believe, some of us still believe, that we can really conceive a world without male violence against women. And if we thought that masculinity is innate, this would be impossible to imagine. If masculinity, with its violent component, is innate and every male in the world has it, how can we dream of a world without male violence? We are convinced that masculinity, with all this I have described, is something that can be, in the very long term, of course, but is something we can do without, is something we can really struggle against and free humanity from it. That's our dream in the very long run. But if we believe that all men are violent by nature, this would be a vain dream. This would be unimaginable. So masculinity and femininity, you can understand gender to be the sum of masculinity and femininity. So that's why we want to abolish it. Of course, abolishing what they call gender, masculinity and femininity, doesn't mean killing people. Absolutely, of course not. And when we, because when we say we want to abolish gender, our adversaries understand we want to put trans people in jail. No, of course not. We want to end with this oppression and with this, without a world without gender would be a world without gender dissatisfaction, a world without this thing they call gender dysphoria. No, so maybe we can agree on that with some of the trans activists. Let me mention in my second chapter, which is called Three Theories About Transgenderism, I really explore what if there is really a way to work alongside with some trans activists in this final aim of abolishing gender. Long story short, we can't, but I do explore it. Slowly and in an argumentative way. I present the arguments of why not, of why we can't. Yes.
So we're running out of time here, and what you seem to be suggesting is that if a child, if a woman wants to become a doctor, or a woman wants to become an engineer, that's fine. And if a man wants to become a, what is this? Basically, you want to do away with the notion that men and women have to follow sex stereotypes. Is that a fair summation of a lot of what you're saying?
Yes, it would be. But let me say something else. Many gender critical women say, hey, let them dress as they like. I was one of them not very long time ago. No, I don't care if a man wears a dress or a wig. But the truth is, if you have read Penal Imperialism by Sheila Jeffries, and you have followed the research by Jennifer Bielek and by Genevieve Gluck, you'll know that there's not transgenderism has this other fetishist component. When men use dresses, it's different from a young boy who uses a dress or who wants to play with dolls. When an adult male wants to wear a dress, yeah, maybe he's free to do that, but we should not deceive ourselves telling us that's okay, because when they do that, they're following their fetish. And it's not a good idea to allow males to display their fetishes in public. So when I say it's...
And to force us to go along with their fetishes.
Excuse me? Go, uh-huh.
And to force everybody else to participate.
Exactly. And that's what's happening with transgenderism. When they say, oh, here's a transgender deputy, so allow him there. You said we are running out of time, and that's a whole other subject. But yes, when I say we have to abolish gender, I mean we have to let go of the idea that boys should like this and that, and be like this and that, and girls have to be the other way around. I advocate for freedom, both for males and females, of choosing their career paths, notwithstanding this is considered a feminine profession or a masculine profession. Yeah, so you summarized it well.
So how can people find out more about your work, and how can people get your book?
My book is in libraries in all the English-speaking world. It's published by Spinif Express. It's www.spinifexpress.com.au, because it's in Australia. And there's a Kindle version, there's an ebook version. You can buy it on Amazon, you can buy it in, you can ask your local bookshop to order it. But the best way to find it is going to spinifex.com.au. And yes, the title is Gender Identity, Lies and Dangers. And I'm in Twitter as at Laura, how do you call this? This it's not a hyphen, but it's a low hyphen, so to
underscore.
Say. Underscore. Yeah. Laura at Laura underscore Lecuona.
And can you spell the last part, please?
Yes, sure. Lecuona.
Well, thank you so much for all of this, and thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Laura Lecuona. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.